The development of mental concentration with the exercise of ocular convergence. We are going to see the definition of this exercise first, then a little bit of history, and then how to control perfectly if the exercise is performed properly. And finally, as the characteristic of our method, the control of its action by the phosphine. As a conclusion, we will study a few modes of application and the question of the third eye in the biological scheme. Definition. This is an exercise during which the axis of the eyes cross each other inside the body. The maximal amount of convergence is obtained when the axis of the eyes cross each other on a horizontal plane that goes through the center of the eyes. Historical traces. The Cathedral of Amiens, Vasco da Gama. We know that yoga dates back to prehistorical times in India. There are drawings of yogi in the posture that is considered the most important that date back to prehistoric times. Patanjali, who wrote the main books of yoga, he mentioned that it is preferable to converge on the extremity of the nose, but he hasn't precised which extremity. So there are two possible interpretations of his writing. Jean Marques Rivière, who was a French ambassador in India, also mentions that he has seen yogis that would converge so much that you could only see the white of their eyes. Nevertheless, this might be slightly excessive. This exercise can also be found in the West. The stained glass window of the Cathedral of Amiens, France, the ones which are located high above the choir, represent two saints who are obviously practicing ocular convergence. They are surrounded by a sort of flame that symbolize the aura. The point of convergence of these flames is the center of their concentric aura, and it is the point they are focusing on. This point is located between their eyes. This cathedral was built by a bishop who was a lieutenant of Saint Louis during the Crusade. It is possible that during the Crusades, Western knights have found the true sources of Christianity, that is to say, initiatory exercises. I have found this ocular convergence in a painting in the church of Carmes de Vidigueira in Portugal. This painting nevertheless seems quite modern. It represents the baby Jesus being presented to the temple for being circumcised. Simeon, an old man who is holding the child, says, "Thanks, Lord, to have enabled me to see the light before I died." It is obviously the spiritual light of Christ that is mentioned. It is very curious, as while he is saying this sentence, this phrase, in the painting, the old man Simeon is practicing ocular convergence. It would be interesting to find out more about the origins of this painting. As the Portuguese had an extensive trade with India, it is possible that a natural compound between Catholicism and yoga was produced over there. The Church of Carmes de Vidigueira was built in the honor of Vasco da Gama, the famous sailor. And this man, Vasco da Gama, had a great interest in psychic questions. His first expedition to India was paid by the Order of Christ rather than the Portuguese state. The Order of Christ was a group with all the Templars that had escaped the massacres in France. It is thus very likely that these last Templars knew that the true sources of Christianity could be found in Oriental exercises, and it is why they had raised the money for this expedition. In another of his travels to India, Vasco da Gama saved his fleet thanks to a dream. This happened on the coast of Mozambique. He thought he was in good terms with the natives, but he saw in a dream that he had to move the fleet immediately during the night. The next day, the locals attacked, but their boats were too light to follow Vasco's boats in the high seas. So, thanks to this dream, the expedition was saved. When he arrived in India, his sailors compounded the religion of Krishna with the Christian religion and went to pray in a temple of Krishna. This decision was probably also very political and diplomatic, but this shows that Vasco da Gama had connections with the local cultures. There is a great chance that he met with yogis. When he died in India, he was buried in a tomb bearing the mark of the Order of Christ, which shows that he belonged to that order. A method for a perfect control of convergence. We are now going to see how to realize this exercise of ocular convergence. The first manner allows an adequate control, though slightly approximative. Focus on the tip of your nose. If you converge well on the tip of your nose, you should see two little triangles of flesh. Now slowly raise your eyes along the nose, and you should see equal the two sides of the nose. Control is not always perfect, and mistakes can often be made. Nevertheless, there is a perfect way to know if the exercise is performed correctly or not. In order to understand this process of control, first conduct the following experiment. Take two pencils and hold them vertically, one in each hand. Place one of those pencils at a distance of approximately 10 to 15 centimeters from your forehead. Hold the other one at an arm's length. When you focus on the first pencil, you see the second pencil as a double. When you focus on the second pencil, it is the other way around. You only see what you are focusing on, especially at a short distance. We all have the impression, when we enter a room, that we see everything clearly. Actually, our eyes are moving all the time, and it is the brain which performs an amazing work of computer to get rid of the blur. You can, if you want, look at a precise point on a drawing and try to focus your attention on the edges of your field of vision without moving your eyes, and you will see that the edge of your field of vision is blurred. Now, let us see another way to proceed. Take a single pencil and hold it horizontally rather than vertically. Start by holding it in one of your hands in a way so that the axis of the pencil is perpendicular to the vertical anteroposterior axis, perpendicular to your forehead, on the level of the eyes. To put it more simply, you hold it with its tip facing towards you in a horizontal position. Focus on the tip of the pencil and bring it towards you. Bring the pencil closer to you until it touches your forehead or the top part of your nose. If you perform convergence correctly, that is to say, if you always focus on the tip of the pencil, you should only perceive a single tip of the pencil, but two double pencils. The image you perceive will form a V. The tip of this V is facing towards you. If you focus on the middle of the pencil, you will perceive two pencils that form an X. If you look at the far end of the pencil, you will see a V more or less well shaped. Certain people will see only a single pencil, that is because they do not converge at all. They focus alternatively with one eye then the other on the tip of the pencil. There is a simple way to improve convergence. When you move the tip of the pencil close to your forehead, you can inhale air with the top of your lungs. Try not to raise your shoulders. This position will improve convergence. Experiment with the phosphine, illustrating the purpose of this exercise. The phosphine will allow us to control the effect of convergence and at the same time to precise this effect. This experiment is tricky to produce, and for it to be successful, you will need particular conditions of darkness. You need to practice in a room in which the conditions of darkness allow you to barely see the tip of your nose. Perceiving your nose will allow you to improve your convergence by focusing on your nose. Then, focus on the tip of your nose for at least 20 seconds. Then, look in the far distance, as if behind the wall there was a boat on the horizon. Do this for at least 20 seconds. Again, try not to move your eyes. Then focus again on the tip of your nose for 20 seconds, and so on until the phosphine has almost completely disappeared. Try to observe variations of the phosphines, whether you are looking close or in the distance. If you have conducted this experiment in the optimal conditions, you will observe that when you focus on your nose, the phosphine seems smaller, brighter, and more precise. By precise, I mean that the edge of the phosphine is less blurred, more sharp. So, the phosphine seems concentrated. Like all phosphenic phenomena, this phenomenon is hidden by a feeling of obviousness. It seems absolutely simple, natural. If you think about it, it is actually quite extraordinary. Indeed, once the light is off, it is the surface of the retina that has been stimulated by light that will remain active, so that theoretically the phosphine should not change, as it is the same surface of retina that is stimulated. Even in conditions of complete darkness, the phenomenon still stays the same. This phenomenon is not logical, as the phosphine is not being projected towards the outside. With your eyes open in conditions of bright enough light, if you can see the room, then you can project the phosphine on the different objects of the room. There, it would seem natural that its surface should grow when you project it further, which would increase the angle. Nevertheless, this should absolutely not take place in the dark, as you are not projecting your phosphine on anything. The neurological magnifying glass. There is no theoretical reason to explain the fact that the phosphine is brighter and that its edge is more precise, as the activity of the retina remains the same. This process is very similar to a magnifying glass, which concentrates rays of light, producing a smaller, more precise, and brighter ray. There seems to be a certain mechanism in the brain which acts like a magnifying glass and concentrates the phosphine like a magnifying glass concentrates rays of light. Experiments with an associated thought. Now we are going to conduct the same experiment, exactly in the same conditions, but without the phosphine. We are going to replace the phosphine by a short auditory thought that you can repeat 2 or 3 times during the 20 seconds. You are going to repeat this thought first during convergence without the phosphine, then while you look in the distance, and so on, like for the previous exercise, but without the phosphine. When you repeat your chosen thought during convergence, it seems more intense, more precise, more concentrated than when you are looking in the distance. You will notice that convergence concentrates thoughts. This allows us to verify 2 laws. First, a restrictive law. Convergence has a power of concentration. It concentrates the phosphine as well as thoughts. Then a more general law. The laws that govern the phosphines or thoughts are always identical. As convergence concentrates thoughts and phosphenic mixing helps focusing attention and also releases extra energy in the brain, you can easily understand that it is beneficial to combine the 2 exercises.
First, choose a thought that you want to strengthen, then do a phosphine, then practice convergence, remaining in the necessary conditions of darkness so that you can see the tip of your nose. Repeat your chosen thought at the same time, but this time during the whole phosphine. That is, if you can maintain convergence during the 3 minutes of the phosphine. If you can't do that, you can release convergence. You will notice that the effects of the phosphine are multiplied again, increased by this combination with convergence. Consequently, it is possible to practice phosphenic mixing with all the other exercises, sways, rotations, breathing, or even convergence. Harmlessness of occular convergence. Certain persons have unjustified fears that this exercise could be harmful for the eyes. First, you can notice that children practice this exercise as a game, but often parents tell them off and say, "Don't do this, you might stay stuck." This might scare the children off this very beneficial practice. Often there is a kind of struggle of the parents, of the adults, against the gestures and postures that lead children to a certain initiation and that they practice instinctively. Children love to rotate on themselves, for example, and are often told off for doing so. Similarly, many school pupils sway on their chairs backwards and forwards and are told off for doing so, when this process actually develops their brain. Physiologically, there is absolutely no danger for the optic nerve to practice ocular convergence. Also, this exercise is widely practiced in yoga schools, and no one ever complains about any harmful effect to the eyes. Let us now see a few variations of the mental exercise. Until now, I have talked about choosing ordinary thoughts, a small prayer, for example. This process intensifies meditation, but our highest goal is to produce rhythmic thinking. The first rhythmic mental exercise that you can practice with ocular convergence is to imagine a movement of rotation between your eyes, the center of rotation being between your eyes and the circle of rotation crossing them. Combination with visualizations of currents of light. Second exercise. You can imagine a current of dots of light coming from the infinite in front of you, going through your forehead, entering through your eyes, through the point on which you have projected your phosphine. The current of dots of light then goes through your skull, through the occipital bump, cuts itself in two halves that move back in front of you. It is a kind of horizontal figure of eight, slightly flat. This movement helps performing convergence, which is hardly surprising as the eyes consider thoughts as objects. When a imaginary current of dots of light enters inside you, your eyes will tend to practice convergence to follow this movement. You can check and you will realize that the opposite movement of an imaginary current of dots of light will disturb convergence. As all initiatory exercises lay on the reversal towards the inside of an activity that is usually directed towards the outside, we can see that this mental exercise favors convergence. If a mental exercise favors convergence, then it is the right one to practice. Finally, we can use ocular convergence to produce a variety of very elevated out-of-body experiences. Philosophers admit that the highest invisible body of human beings, the mental body, is a sphere. A friend of mine, Jacques Villemejeune, when he was a young man, experienced 3 astral projections after practicing fasting for several days and with the idea that he wanted to go outside of his body. After practicing for several days, he experienced an astral projection within a spherical object. He felt as if he was a sphere. During his first out-of-body experience, he was projected in the south of France, when he lives in Paris, and he saw a forest fire. From his spherical body, he had the impression that he was projecting thoughts towards the firefighters in order to help them. When he reintegrated his body the next day, he saw that this forest fire was described in the newspaper. As the eye is also a sphere, we can imagine that it is particularly related to the mental body, as it is also a sphere. Here is another good exercise. Imagine sparks that move in front of you and enter through the tips of your toes and the tips of your fingers. They move through your whole body, gathering on the point where you perform convergence. Then they are projected towards your occipital bump, the zone of the phosphene, the zone of vision. There they exit your skull and are projected in a sphere behind you that is rotating. This process is opposite to what happened during the previous exercise, as the dots of light do not come back to you, they gather in a sphere behind you. The current that goes through your body should go through the regions that give you the impression of the existence of your body, that is to say, synesthesian sensations. For instance, if you are sitting down, it is mainly the flesh that is compressed between your skin and your bones that you are feeling. When the imaginary current of sparks goes through this zone, you will notice that it kind of drains this notion of the existence of the body. Through this process, the notion of the existence of your body is projected in the sphere that is rotating behind you. Naturally, as always, you should strive to make the sparks move in waves with a regular rhythm, as it is the regularity of the rhythm that is the most important phenomenon. Then, when the phosphine has disappeared, you can relax your eyes as if you were looking in front of you. Nevertheless, maintain your attention on the sphere behind you and try to identify yourself to it. Imagine that you have the shape of a sphere, and after a while, imagine that this sphere explodes and that you are dissolved in the universe. The universe can be perceived, can be felt as a sensation of immensity. This is a very good exercise. Also, there are other ways to practice ocular convergence which are rather curious. Once you can practice convergence adequately, try to converge on a point located between your eyebrows. You will perceive a shadow that is like the wings of a bird, which actually is your eyebrows that you can see. Because the eyebrows project a kind of shadow, projecting the phosphine within this shadow allows you to work with your eyes open during daylight hours in conditions of light, but still you will be able to perceive your phosphine. Now, it is generally recognized that there is a psychic center located between the eyes on the level of the forehead, and it is usually considered as the sixth chakra, the eye of Shiva. Converging with your phosphine on this psychic center has to be of interest. While you are converging and projecting your phosphine on this point, you can visualize an invisible unknown ray projected by the eyes on this point. Eventually, you will have the sensation that this invisible ray has become a fluid that you can feel. Sensation of vision through the third eye. This is the final way to perform ocular convergence, and I believe it is the most spiritual one. This manner of practicing ocular convergence will give you the impression that you are looking through a third eye located in the middle of your forehead. In order to do this, start to converge as we have seen before. Whether focus on the tip of your nose, whether on the middle of your nose, or, if possible, between your eyes. Once you are in the right physical position, do not change it, but change the mental position. Instead of applying all your will to focusing on a point, apply it to try to make your eyes collide. If you put all your will to imagining that your eyes are moving closer to each other, you will have the impression that you are looking through your eyes as if you had a third eye located there. The third eye. This leads us to study the complex problem of the existence of the third eye, first on a zoological level, then on a spiritual level. This sensation of third eye appears during certain psychic experiences. For instance, when I was 20 years old, with Master Gallip's method, I was often experiencing conscious astral projections. When I was re-entering my body, I had a strong sensation of a third eye located between my eyes and through which I was looking. During phosphenic experiences, there is often the vision of an eye that is looking at you, especially during the experiment of concentrating on the detail of the visual chaos. This might be a reflection of this eye of Shiva, the spiritual third eye. Let us now focus on the connections between the third eye according to Eastern esoteric tradition, a third eye that would provide the possibility to see the invisible world, and a third eye on the level of zoological evolution. Certain children are born as cyclops, that is to say, with a single eye located in the middle of the forehead, and this phenomenon is more frequent with dogs. Of course, these phenomena have no connection with the spiritual third eye, they are part of the biological scheme, and they correspond to a defect of separation of the brain hemispheres for children and dogs, and it's a defect of the embryo. Connection between spiritual traditions. On the other hand, the larva of the crab has a single eye in the middle of the forehead, and this eye shrinks and atrophiates when the two lateral eyes are developed. Also, there is a very general law that states that an eye can appear where an animal needs it. For instance, there is a very long fish, roughly 1 meter 50, which has the shape of an eel. It has two normal eyes on the front and a third on the tip of its tail. Why? Because it is a fish which has the habit of hiding in small cracks in the rocks with its head in front. It thus also needs another eye at the tip of its tail to check if a predator doesn't come from the back. In Australia, there are still lizards which have a third eye on the top of their skull. Why? Because this is a more archaic shape due to the fact that evolution has taken place at a slower pace in the Australian islands. This eye is used by lizards to check for predators coming from above. There are also certain snakes which have between their eyes a small patch of a different color. This is not a simple natural ornament. This patch allows them to detect infrared rays at a distance. This allows them to hunt at night. There is also another animal which has a third eye. It is quite surprising, as it is the frog. This eye cannot be seen as it is located under the frog's skin, and it allows the animal to detect ultraviolet spectrum. This is very interesting. Let us now study the pineal gland. The name pineal reminds of the pine nut. It is also called the epiphysis, which means located above the brain. This gland is located at the intersection of a connection that would go from the temporal bumps, a little bit above the middle of the eyebrows, to the middle of the forehead. This gland is very curious as it contains, on one hand, visual cells, and on the other hand, muscular cells, as well as grains of calcium. It is like a microcosm of the whole of the organism. It reminds me of what certain African sorcerers do to solve great trouble in the area. In a small bag, they place a representative element of everything in the region, a flower of each plant, a stone from each rock, an insect of each variety, and through the intermediary of this microcosm, they try to have an action on the whole of the country. The epiphysis is consequently a kind of microscopic little bag representing our organism. Already in the Library of Alexandria, there was a book which was copied before the library burned, where it was mentioned that the Hindu considered this gland as the spiritual eye. But only a certain part, one half of this gland, constitutes a kind of atrophiated eye. So, how come in yoga texts or texts from spiritualist traditions, this third eye is located between the eyes rather than on the epiphysis? Well, this can be explained through embryology, as the third eye of the lizards is a bud of the epiphysis that has risen between the parietal bones, and certain anatomists consider that in the human species there is a small notch where the parietal bones join, that is the trace in the evolution of living beings of the time when there was a third eye on the top of the skull. The third eye of the frog has formed the following way. A bud has grown on the epiphysis of the young. It has reached the top of its skull and has exited it through the entry of the parietal bones and has moved towards the front. On the embryological level, there is in the frog a connection between the epiphysis and the third eye located in the middle of the forehead under the skin. A parallel between the tradition of the nadis and the embryological trajectory of the third eye derived from the pineal gland. We have seen that when an organ is active in the embryo and then is atrophiated with age, it tends to have a greater importance on the spiritual level. It is very likely that the same law governs the evolution of all living beings. That is to say, when an organ has a great importance in lower animal and that it is atrophiated with the development of the chain of species, it takes more importance on the spiritual level. In yoga, it is admitted that the main nadi, that is to say, the main tube through which the spiritual air circulates in the invisible body or etheric body, starts in the middle of the lower part of the chest, rises up to the top of the skull where it opens, and from there it goes forwards until it reaches a point between the two eyes. So, through this kind of inner research, one can find the evolutive trajectory of the epiphysis going up to the top of the skull first and then moving between the two eyes. It is as if this trajectory had been atrophiated during the evolution of living beings and had consequently acquired a greater importance in the invisible body. A mention of the third eye in the Gospels. For example, in the preaching on the mountaintop, there is this sentence: "The eye is the lamp of the body." This sentence comes immediately after a sentence that has no connection with it. The Gospels are always very precise. For instance, the description of the fit of epilepsy is exactly like it is described in medical books. It is a genuine summary of all the important points. So, if Christ wanted to say the eyes, that would be in the text. Instead, we find the eye is the lamp of the body. Christ must have wanted to speak about something else. What could this be? Could this be a mention of the phosphine, of ocular convergence, or a mention of the third eye, the eye of Shiva? No one knows, as the description of the exercise has been removed from the text, as I had a chance to say before. That was engineered so that the masses would not acquire the power of the initiates. The third eye and the photophorus of certain fishes. Certain fishes have an organ called photophorus. This organ emits light. It is built exactly like an eye that would function in reverse. All its parts matching the various parts of the eye, but in reverse. So, this organ can be used by the fish to emit light. So, the sentence of the Gospels, "the eye is the lamp of the body," can be adapted exactly to the physical condition of the organs, these luminous fishes. So, there might be in the invisible body an organ that is the spiritual equivalent of this photophorus, and to this spiritual organ the sentence of Christ, "the eye is the lamp of the body," could be applied perfectly. This eye, through clairvoyance, could bring information and shed light on the universe for the individual.